Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Anything happen this week?
Well, it depends. Do you want to talk about what happened late last night into this morning, I guess?
Sure. What was that? What happened?
Apple sued
John Prosser.
YouTuber, John Prosser.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be... I don't wish this kind of thing on anybody. And certainly whenever you get companies aiming at people reporting on them, there's always some questions.
I don't love it.
Right? Like, I don't love that aspect of it. That said, there will be either a case or a settlement in this case, right? Like, there will either be a hearing or a trial or whatever, or a settlement. I would guess probably a settlement is my feeling.
Sure.
But certainly the stuff that Apple is alleging happened in this case would be, to my mind anyways, and I'm sure you will have an opinion on this, outside the bounds of what one might consider operating in good faith as a... I hesitate to say journalist, but, you know, as a person reporting on and covering a company.
We'll call him, I mean, I think holding him to the standard of journalist is probably fine. Also, in true Six Colors podcast, classic fashion, my laundry is spinning now. It had to be cleaned, Dan. It had to be cleaned.
Sure.
What I recall from my journalism law classes, which they did make everybody take when I went to journalism school, inducement is a real question. Like, are you inducing people to break the law? I don't know the details of that Trade Secrets Act that they invoke. I'll just say, I don't think it is the business of a journalist to be concerned about trade secrets, right? Like,
sure.
I feel like the people who disclose the secrets,
yes, I would tend to agree with you,
are guilty,
and they will be punished by the company generally by being fired.
But if
or
I am
in other ways reprimanded or sued, which has happened.
But if I'm given the Pentagon Papers, I don't care where they came from. I will, if they are of public interest, I will publish them. And so Apple filing against Prosser under claims involving trade secrets acts. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know about that particular provision. But what I did find interesting is they found his sources. So John Prosser does Front Page Tech, which is a YouTube channel, and he has a lot of attitude. And he did a series of things about what the next design would look like for what was not yet iOS 26. And they were fairly accurate. And so the most interesting thing in this court filing is there was an Apple employee who had a phone running it. He had a friend. Unclear to me what the deal is with this friend, because this friend apparently lives up in the foothills here and not in the Bay Area. But his friend had access. Maybe he was visiting him and stayed with him, or maybe he was crashing on his couch. I don't know. It's a mystery. Not detailed, at least in the stuff that I've read. But he had a friend. His friend noticed what his passcode was and knew that his friend was running this pre-release software with the new design on it, and they're apparently fine, my friends. And that doesn't mean, I mean, we're fine, my friends, Dan. I know where you are. Yeah. You're at home right now. I can see it. And waited for him to be far away, and then unlocked the phone and FaceTimed on a different device with John Prosser and walked him through the interface. That was the thing.
Right.
So the friend
and this the keep in mind also. These are a lot of details, right, which feel like a thing that you would be difficult to corroborate unless you have someone who knows about it, right? Like, how are they going to find out about a random...
Well, yeah.
Right, so, which they detail a bit. They have they got basically an anonymous tip-off.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody said, it's amazing, right? So somebody sent Apple an anonymous tip that apparently... they recognized the Apple employee's apartment or house or whatever, dwelling, in a video that they were shown, which was...
Right.
So that's the thing that's amazing.
That's the weird part.
Right? That John Prosser was, I guess, showing, or maybe, you know, John Prosser was showing this guy, this person, that leak video, And that person was like, oh, I know whose house that is, and said, and named a bunch of names, including some redacted names, that these people are in on this, and this is all part of a conspiracy to leak this stuff, and they turned them in. So there was a whistleblower, presumably inside Apple, who saw this, right, or connected,
otherwise,
or
how are they
going to
know what his, how are they going
to
know what his apartment
yeah.
looks
or,
like?
Or, right? I mean, the one, yeah, or somebody who has a friend at Apple who also, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions, but.
But the yeah. guy who worked at Apple was fired. Sure. And it apparently admitted to this and presented some stuff into evidence. Not fired as being a leaker, right? Not fired for mishandling Apple's stuff. That he took a phone with secret stuff and did not keep good care of it. It was not on his person. His friend knew the passcode. It's like very bad. Like don't do that. But the people who seem to really be in trouble are the friend and John Prosser. And again, not a lawyer, but we'll see what the details are of the lawsuit and whether John Prosser is considered to be acting inappropriately to induce the creation of their argument is that he offered to pay this guy to break into the phone, and that is inducement. So yeah,
and you'd need evidence, right? You'd need these people to be testifying essentially that this is what he did. That he, you know, that he offered payment, if whether it was the person that he paid or some other person with records of this, because obviously he has already been on the record to say that this was not how it went, and that he didn't plot to access anyone's phone. So, you know, it's that's a he said, he said at this point, until it gets into the court of law.
And obviously,
Apple has considerably deeper pockets than John Prosser. And this is the place where I do side with him, because I think where it gets tricky is you don't want companies with really deep pockets to be able to shut down independent, you know, content creators, journalists, what have you, because there's always going to be an imbalance there, right? Like, and First Amendment rights technically still protect you to publish as a member of the press. It's always trickier, I think, in instances like our industry, because although I do think we should hold ourselves to high journalistic ethics, and there are certainly stories that touch upon matters that have far-reaching consequences, right? You know, I'm thinking about some of the stuff about like data privacy, data security, all that kind of stuff, right? What are these big tech companies doing with all your information? When it gets to our sort of more enthusiast end of the press, you can make both arguments, right? On the one hand, I think Apple will have a harder time proving that they were materially hurt by this, right? You know, people saw renders of what their design might look like before they got to release it. It's an OS that everybody gets for free. It's not going to depress people from getting things, right? It's not going to stop sales. It's not going to materially impact their business, other than they'd really like them not to know about it.
Apple's argument is always that surprises make a greater impact than things that are known, and that he's stealing their ability to make an impact. And they also claim,
hard to quantify,
in a funny detail, they claim that some of the things that he saw have not yet been disclosed,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting, whatever that is.
Sure. But the flip side of that, too, is, right, like, you know, you mentioned the Pentagon Papers. This is not the Pentagon
Papers,
right? You mentioned the public interest being a factor here. And, like, is there interest in this publicly? Certainly.
Yeah.
Is it something that benefits society in some way that is like, hey, by blowing the whistle on this, we are alerting people to something that is important and that they need to know about? No.
Without getting into current events, I'm just going to say I've seen a lot of stories lately about certain current events where people are, there's like, we need to know. We demand the release of this information. We need to know.
I don't know what you could be talking about.
And I'll just say, people wanting to know is not the same as people needing to know.
This is a conversation I have with my 3-year-old, because he always says, I need to do this thing. And I'm like, you don't need to do this thing. You want to do this thing. Yeah.
The public is interested in gossip, but gossip is not in the public interest.
Yes.
Right. There's a difference in meaning there. Everybody wants to know everything. It comes up with like, I wonder how much that person is making, or I want to know details of somebody's marriage. Are they divorced? Are they on the outs? Are they having an affair at a Coldplay concert? References, topical. And you know what? You don't have the right to know that stuff. Like, that is not your business. And, you know, you just because you're interested in it doesn't mean that you have a right to know it. You may know it. Right. You may find it out. But, like, it doesn't mean, like, I demand that you release the Coldplay files, right? That's not going to happen. It's not going
to
happen.
And that's again, where I always think there's a tricky line to walk here, because you could make the argument this doesn't hurt anybody. And it's a victimless crime and whatever. But it's, you know, there are, I think, as you said off the top, I do think there are ethical considerations from the journalist's point of view. And I think there are important issues when it comes to large companies being able to easily silence people.
Yes.
So I think it's a complex issue. And personally, I do not care for John Prosser. But that said, if he did not do anything that sort of violated the ethical constraints, then he should absolutely not have to, you know, be sued by Apple.
Yeah, but seriously, it's don't make me defend. Please don't make me defend John
Don't
Prosser.
Make me defend the worst person, right?
Like, horrible tragedy. So, but yes, giant. And you know, one of the arguments is going to be this is going to create a chilling effect on reporting about Apple. And that's the truth is, that's what Apple wants. That is absolutely the intent here. Apple does this stuff from time to time, like they acquire companies.
Yep.
From time to time, they fire people, investigate people, sue people about leaks.
When they have, good, right? They need the evidence,
because
right? Like, when you have a good case,
they want to make examples of people. They want it to be known that they fired this guy, because the next person who would be loose with an iPhone maybe will not. I had a friend of mine who used to work at Apple who was wearing an Apple Watch, and it was after the Apple Watch had been announced, but before anybody had gotten their hands on one. And he was like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, should you even be showing this to me? And he's like, well, I'm not going to do a demo for you. And I was like, okay, all right, fair. But it is a chilling effect. They want people to be a little afraid of that. And it's funny, most of the Apple employees I will say all of the Apple employees I talk to are really good at this. Like, I will get feedback after announcements. I got a text after the iPad stuff was announced at WWDC from a person I know at Apple who was like, see, right? It's like, okay, fine. You're boasting.
Yeah.
It's fun. It was very funny because we talk about iPad stuff all the time. But like, they're good at this. But obviously, some people are not. And so Apple occasionally would like to remind everybody that they could get in really big trouble if they talked to Mark Gurman.
Exactly. And I've known rank and file Apple people as well who have talked to me about things. But like, you know, also there's clarifications and lines between what is on the record, what is not on the record, what are things that I'm like,
totally.
I'm not reporting on things that people tell me that are not on the record, because that's just.
And honestly, I think I also think it benefits Apple, because I talk to people sometimes who Apple PR would never authorize their speaking to me. Right. Obviously. And yet sometimes I get good fundamental understanding of technology beneath the surface that informs my reporting and writing about those issues in a way that makes me better informed about what Apple is doing. It's a good thing to be better informed about it. And I know that Apple PR is not interested, because they have their very specific level that they talk to. And so, you know, in that case, a lot of times I feel like these Apple employees who do talk to people in the press behind the scenes with understanding and with kind of honor, and not about secret things that are going to leak, are, you know, they're actually helping the cause, even though it's sort of like sub rosa. They are helping the cause. I'm reminded, by the way, of our friend Jim Dalrymple, who for many years at Macworld, he knew everything that was coming.
Yeah.
And he would tell us, but he said, this is, I can't report it. And it was so frustrating, because he would tell us, but you know what? It was helpful to know what was coming and to plan for it, even though we couldn't report on it. And then when Jim left Macworld, he just started reporting on all of it, which I found like hilarious. Like, oh, I guess the rules changed. But it can be helpful. And behind the scenes, sort of like little details, I mean, I've had conversations with people about all sorts of little details that it's like, oh, I've learned something. That's really helpful. Would Apple PR want me to talk to you? No. But you taught me something about how Apple products work. Not a secret.
Yeah.
But not something I knew. And that's good. I like those people. Those people should still talk to me.
Yeah.
But I'm not a leaker making inflammatory YouTube videos either.
Yeah. Well, and so Zoe Knox asked in Discord, or said basically, I'm kind of surprised Gurman has never been hit with anything like this, which is, I mean, there's a couple things to consider. One, he's got the backing of Bloomberg, which is a very big and influential financial publication, and that's not nothing, right?
Yep.
It's very different to take on a YouTuber who works for himself from somebody backed by a large, but you know, a very big, very influential publication.
Should have gone for Gurman when he was at 9 to 5 Mac.
Right, exactly.
You missed your chance.
And two, I mean, again, you got to have a good case, right? You can't, you come. You come at the king. You best not miss, right?
Like,
you can't take a shot unless you don't have it.
You can't go after Gurman. You have to go after Gurman's sources, and I think this is one of those cases where, let me tell you, I have no doubt that they've gone after Gurman's sources, right?
Sure,
zero doubt. But I think Gurman is one. So Mark Gurman, let's say on the negative side. He has to write a weekly newsletter, which means he has to do punditry, and I can take or leave his punditry. I mostly don't agree with it. I think it's simplified, but, you know, whatever. It is what Bloomberg wants him to do. Great. His sources are immaculate. He's almost always right. When he's wrong, I think he's wrong because he either got somebody who misunderstood something or it changed, but I don't think he makes anything up. I think his sources are very good. And the other thing that we don't talk about enough with Gurman is his source cleanliness, discipline. I know you're a fan of spy novels. I don't know what tradecraft is. I would say it's got to be immaculate. It's got to be immaculate. He's probably using Signal. He puts a Signal thing everywhere.
Right?
He doesn't want to. I feel like he wants it as locked down as possible because. And if they are finding his sources, nobody ever has learned it, right? Like, they just disappear from East Berlin, Dan, right? Like, whatever happened to them? So,
well, I mean, it's within his interests and within the responsibility of a reporter to protect your sources.
Yes.
And that from everybody, right? Like,
they haven't gotten to him because I'm sure they're looking really hard for his sources and they haven't gotten to him.
You got to keep in mind that's also one way that you get sources, right? If you're like, look, this is my record.
Yeah.
Nothing ever blows back on the people that I do work
for. Apple
hasn't
fired anybody who talked to me.
Yeah. So,
how could you check that? You can't check that.
You can't
check
who?
It,
but like, yeah. Name names. Damn, wait. No, you almost got me.
Schiller?
Good.
Oh, I mean, Yeah.
Also, I suspect, I don't know. I suspect some of the people are higher up as well based on some of the information, but you never know. So it's a crapshoot, right? Like, some people are better at this than others, and sometimes the luck is on your side too, right?
That's
not an inconsiderable amount of it. Sometimes you get lucky and the stuff that they're looking at is not the stuff you're doing. So
I think Mark Gurman's OPSEC is solid, like his tradecraft, but also like I'm sure that he doesn't leave his phone with Signal on it laying somewhere where a friend knows the passcode and can get
He doesn't accidentally CC Tim on his Signal chats.
Because that would be, reference acknowledged. So that would be a problem too. So I've got to give
amazing that it's amazing that we have this many references of things that are actually relevant.
It is incredible. So the other thing that made me chuckle in the lawsuit is super cool, snarky John Prosser. My mom's from Pennsylvania and my mom's family, and I've been to all parts of Pennsylvania over the years, and I was surprised to see that John Prosser is apparently a resident of the state of Pennsylvania. And I thought, I wonder where he is. Is he in, my guess was sort of a Philadelphia area, that's where a lot of people are, or maybe Pittsburgh area, or it's possible like center of the state or Western Pennsylvania. Like, it's an interesting state. Apparently he is at least legally in Derrick City, Pennsylvania, a place I'd never heard of, and I looked up, and Dan, it is, I told this to Stephen Hackett, and he was like, Jason, not all tech influencers live in the Bay Area. It's like, look, this is like nowhere Pennsylvania. I'm very surprised that this is where he lives. It's Derrick City is like unincorporated. It's, which is a bold move, by the way, to have the word city in the name of an unincorporated place. It's like a white spot on the road. There's nothing there. Its closest place is Bradford, which is also a white spot on the road. So it is it is out in the middle of nowhere. Pennsylvania. It is right by the New York state line. It's not like over by Erie, nor is it way over on the other side. It's like I don't know. Is the closest big city to it probably Buffalo? It's far from everything. So if, you know, I'm sure it's a great low cost of living if John Prosser is still out there. But I just chuckled because I was like, oh, I wonder where in Pennsylvania he lives. And the answer is in the middle of nowhere. It's really amazing.
I was going to say, it's pretty close actually to where my cousin has some land down in the Allegheny County, New York.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's
pretty close
that's
to there,
right.
Which
that's
is, but right. I've been down there and it's sleepy, we'll say.
My family spent a lot of time, my mom and my uncle and my grandmother, in Brockway and Dubois. And if you drive up the road to Brockway from Dubois and keep driving for a very long time, you will end up at Bradford, and then you can make a right to visit John Prosser. But I was surprised. That is, yeah, that's it's rural. No judgment. I grew up in a small town. I just didn't picture John Prosser as being, coming in live from Allegheny,
I guess, again,
Pennsylvania.
Keep your costs down when you're making
YouTube videos. Making, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, YouTube videos.
It's pretty good. Happen. You gotta do that.
Don't live in
out there. You're not even that close to Lake Erie.
Suburban
there.
Boston. It's tell you. It's
anyway, and then the collaborator was in Pioneer, California, which I have heard of. It's up in the foothills. And again, I don't know if this is one of those things where they're a resident of there, but then they come and visit their friend down in the Silicon Valley area. But that Pioneer is not too far from where I grew up. So it's above Jackson. There's a bunch of, when you're in the foothills in California, you think in terms of the highways that go over the mountains, because that's sort of where all the settlements are. And so Pioneer is a couple highways north of mine, I guess is the way I would put it, but still not. And actually it's on 88. I've been on that highway a bunch of times. So yeah, just another white spot in the road. Now, I don't know if you're a lawyer for Morrison and Forrester, who are Apple's lawyers in this case, like how do you establish what their residency is? And they say like based on all our knowledge or whatever available knowledge. So they may not actually be in those places. That may be something that they found that is a
older address.
Yeah, exactly. But still, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, as Joe Steele just said in the chat, some friend that guy was. Yeah, indeed. I mean, really, like, what we don't know is why the phone was left there and why the friend knew the passcode. And, like,
yeah, it is a little weird, right, because they said, like, they ascertained when he'd be gone for a while. I was like, but who goes for a long time without bringing their
with leaving your friend who's maybe visiting or maybe not, but yes,
it's a little odd. Like maybe unless you're going for a run or something, maybe who knows?
You know, they might have allowed him to leave, be terminated without going too far in exchange for his cooperation. But I think there's an argument to be made that the Apple employee maybe did cooperate in this scheme to a certain degree. If not, it is a heck of a betrayal. But also, the person looks like a buffoon because they let this phone sit there with the guy knowing the passcode.
Well, at least they didn't leave it in a bar.
Yeah. We are still working, I think it's fair to say, on our public beta coverage. Guess what? The public beta didn't come out this week.
Yeah, amazing. It's almost as if you can look back over the last week and see there's no public beta.
Yeah, or beta of any kind, which surprises me. I'm surprised that there was not another regular beta
dev
this week.
Build, yeah.
Because it's been 2 weeks.
And now I'm kind of wondering if there'll be another one. Like, so if they didn't put a public beta out based on the last dev build, because for whatever reason, they decided not to use that one, which is fine, it would imply there was a reason they didn't want to do it, and yet they haven't released a new developer beta on which the public beta would presumably be based, which is odd.
Right. German says he thinks it's next week. I don't know because, I think there are a couple scenarios that could be here. There are a few. One of them is that there are some specific things that they want to do for the public beta build because whether you believe this or not, Apple believes, and Dan and I can tell you about it because Apple PR definitely talks a lot about the public beta as an important milestone, and the developer beta is less so. They believe that they make a bigger splash with the public beta. So it's possible that they have spent the last 2 weeks changing the beta to get it to be where they want it for the public beta. But even then, I think you would release it as a developer beta first to make sure it doesn't break things. So I have a hard time believing what Mark Gurman says about it probably coming out like next Tuesday, because there's no beta now to base it on. And it's been, unless it's based on the beta from 3 weeks ago, or I have strong reason to believe it's not.
Yeah, I agree. Because like, if there was something, if they were ready, it would have come out, right?
Yes, I think.
And
I
so if it's not ready, they need to do something else. And if they need to do something else, there needs to be a new build.
I don't want anybody from Morrison and Forrester to find where I live. But I'll just say that I find it a strong possibility that they, you know, that this beta didn't come out this week based on last week's beta for a reason. I don't know what the reason would be, but like, I think they were lining it up for this week and it didn't happen for whatever reason. So I think the most logical thing would be for them to release a developer beta next week.
Yes.
And then go with the public beta on the 28th or 29th, which would still be in the month of July.
July. They'll make it.
I think that would be the most logical. If they wanted to rush it, they could do a developer beta on Monday and then do the public beta Wednesday or Thursday. They could do that. That
which
would
may be the case, because it's possible that if they have a new developer beta that they're testing, that they would feel confident enough in it fixing whatever, you know, whatever was the problem that, you know, the last beta had, that they could then be like, okay, we fixed that, that, you know, if there was a showstopper, for example, if there was a bug that was a really big bug and they're like, we got to fix that bug, and they release a new beta, it's like, okay, it's mainly just going to fix this bug and we're relatively confident we're not adding any new bugs, then maybe you could roll a public beta out after like 2 days. Sure. But I agree with you that it seems like you would probably want to release a new dev beta, give that a few days, if not a week, to like, okay, it all looks good.
Right, because the idea is you release it to developers who have reasons to use it, and the people on the dev beta are more able to accept risk. And then you release it to the masses if it doesn't blow up in somebody's face. That seems like a good model, right? And so you want to use that. You want to release it to the much larger group that's the developer beta and see what happens. And then unless there's like a feature that they want to like roll in for the first time.
Except they, there's nothing in
that.
There.
And they never do there, that. There, they there's always also put nothing it in the developer left. Beta. Yeah,
there's like three things. Yeah. And like, there's no reason that you would, if any of those were ready, you would put them in already. There's no reason to hold them to make a splash. Yeah. So the main interesting questions are either A, is there a bug or bugs that are serious enough that have to be fixed? Or B, and I find this less likely, but is the consternation, shall we say, over some of the decisions made in earlier beta, has that hit a point where they feel like they need to do something about that before releasing it? I don't find that particularly plausible, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. I do wonder if what happened is they released that last developer beta, the beta 3, and then they began to gear up to do public beta. And it doesn't feel like there were show-stopping bugs that we know about in the developer beta.
I'm still using last dev beta. It's as good as any of the others.
The one weird, not a thing we've seen before that I would throw out there is exactly what you were saying, which is somebody on the inside, maybe up all the way up to Craig, was like, wait a second. We are running around like chickens with our heads cut off about liquid glass, and like we keep changing it, and like we're going to go out with this public beta. We need to go back and have a conversation about what we're doing here, because it seems like we're kind of all over the place. And public beta, you know, you could argue public beta should be when it is dialed in pretty close to what it's going to be. Still has room to change, but should not be vacillating wildly from beta to beta like these first three developer betas have. I could see somebody making that argument, like, wait a second, what are we doing here? If we're going to release something, we should release it.
Should be close.
Close to what we think it should be, and not like all over the place with the design. And maybe even the designers are like, wait a second, we don't like that beta 3 design, for various reasons. I don't want to go out with that for the public beta. So there may be some reasons like that too, but I would still expect them to do a developer beta release in front of it just in case. But they could do it fast. They could do a Monday release of the developer beta and then like Wednesday or Thursday the public beta comes out. That's entirely possible. Yeah. But I wouldn't put it past them to just have pushed the schedule to beta 4 and then the following week, which is still July, public beta.
Yep, I agree. I think either of those things could happen. I'm most interested in seeing when we see that next beta, whatever it looks like, what will there be noticeable changes? Or is this all under the hood stuff that is getting fixed? Because there's stuff in there that I definitely, you know, having used now, you know, the beta for what, over a month, you know, there's stuff in there that's been critiqued by a lot of people, including our pal Federico Vitici, that I think makes some very good points about usability stuff, not just in the look, not just in the glass, but also in some of the actual interfaces and like, okay, it takes me more taps to do this thing now than I used to do. And part of me wonders if that is stuff that they're looking on refining, and that's more complicated, right? It's one thing to be like, we need to adjust the transparency of the glass layers. Like, okay, that takes some work, but it's, you know, it's not like a huge thing. But if you actually need to go in there and change the way some of these UIs are working, that might require a little more discussion, a little more work. It might be a little more substantial, and maybe this would give, like, look, we got 2 weeks to get out a new dev beta and then see how that goes before we put out the public beta.
Yeah.
But I do think they want some time, like not just for the like developers using stuff and like, hey, these are bugs or this isn't working, but also like there's going to be response to it. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be, you can argue about how much Apple takes that to heart, but I think there are people's opinions that they do care about or are interested in. And I think they want to see how some of that lands potentially. So
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Do not know. Well, we will see. Maybe next week. Maybe not.
Maybe.
But we'll find out on next week's podcast, which I think, despite it being the summer, will probably be next Friday.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Let's do it next Friday.
Okay. Thanks to everybody for listening and being members. We appreciate it. Until next week. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.